Time to podcast.
Welcome everyone into the Hyper Time. The Hyper Time to podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Miller, and I'm back after what feels like 40 years to do another episode. So rusty that I have now recorded this first minute like three times now, just trying to get back into the hang of things. But yep, I am back to do another episode. And truth be told, this is my second attempt at a new episode, because the first one I had tried to record for Tower of Babel, the JLA storyline by Mark Waid and Howard Porter. And I was disappointed in as I was recording it, because it really wasn't an episode I really felt very happy in doing. I was kind of disappointed with the lack of information I found, so I just scrapped it entirely. And now here I am with one that I am more confident in. There's less talk about the stories themselves, and more about the actual behind-the-scenes stuff, which is what I was most interested in. So yeah. If you just happen to overlook the topic for today, we are going to talk about Armageddon 2001, which was the like summer event slash annual event that DC Comics were doing back in the 90s. There were stuff like the Eclipso story. There was Bloodlines. There was Dead Earths. They did a whole bunch of weird stuff in the 90s. Early 90s, at least. And so I wanted to go out to one that I like, which was Bloodlines, but I couldn't find a whole lot about Bloodlines, so I decided to do Armageddon 2001, which I also like. But Armageddon 2001 has a very interesting backstory, in case anyone doesn't know about it. And we'll get to a lot of that stuff, but it's absolutely fascinating to see kind of the stumbles that happened during it. And I think DC tried to retcon and fix in later years, but also I think it kind of taught them a very valuable lesson in not changing up a story just because they want a surprise. So hopefully they continue to not do stuff like that, because this was a perfect example of that not working out. So let's go ahead and get into that, because it's a lot of fun and it's very interesting. So here we go. So DC decided to do something different in 1991. Up to that point, they were having like regular event stories every year. 1991 would be no different. However, the method in doing so would change. Instead of a 6 to 12 issue series, they decided to instead focus on telling those stories within the annuals of their regular books, with a bookend title to start and end it. For Armageddon 2001 specifically, I'm not sure who the original brainchild was. However, Dan Jurgens said he was contacted first by Archie Goodwin to join the creative team on the series. Soon after that, Dick Giordano, Mike Carlin, and Denny O'Neill all reached out to him for the same reason. During these conversations, they went through the gist of what Armageddon 2001 would be. Of course, Dan, being a fan of time travel, as if that has not been evident throughout his entire career, hopped on board. Armageddon would have an introduction issue, spread through 12 of the annuals that summer, and then wrap up with Armageddon 2001 number 2. The device in which to connect everything would be Wave Rider, a new character who can see into the future of every hero. Archie Goodwin was the originator of the character, but it fell on Dan Jurgens for the actual design. Once that was done, both of them ironed out the remaining elements of the character, along with some input by Denny O'Neill, and they had their new time-traveling connector. I reached out to Jurgens, and he said the following about the creation of Wave Rider. As I recall, Archie's thought was sort of a time-traveling Silver Surfer. So with that in mind, I went to work on various designs. Visualized energy was going to be a component of the look to add energy to the page, so that's really what I started to explore. And even at that early stage, Denny O'Neil was involved in the overall discussions, as was Mike Carlin. Dick Giordano, too. Given the high profile of the project, approvals from numerous people would have been expected. Now, the plot was simple enough. One hero would turn to a villain named Monarch and create a dystopian future in which they rule. As we know, throughout the entire series, there is one major question. Who was Monarch? According to Dan Juergens, that question is what drove the series and had one answer from the get-go. Captain Atom would be Monarch. And this is something that he also said as well. Monarch was a thing right from the start as well. The idea was to have him fully armored and masked in order to hide his identity. So job one was to come up with a cool villainous look, and job two was to obscure who might really be under the mask. Captain Atom was meant to be the villain right from the start. It started with my very first conversation regarding the project. As for why it was him, I suspect it came down to his overall power level. Long term, he would have made a truly formidable foe. However, someone who ran a Comic Scoop phone number where people could call in and get those sweet deets found out this very answer and news got out. I've also seen that this was published in the Comics Buyer's Guide, so it's possible that they found out the phone line and ran with it. I'm not really sure. I've kind of heard different stories as to where that news broke exactly. But I think Dan Juergens chalks it up to the phone line at that time. But in an effort to make the ending a surprise for fans still, and because they were angry the reveal was leaked, DC Editorial decided to do something it shouldn't have. It forced Archie Goodwin and Denny O'Neil to change the ending. No longer was Monarch going to be Captain Atom. Instead, they would replace that reveal to be Hank Hall. Hawk from Hawk, from Hawk and Dove. Juergens originally thought that they should stay the course, even with the spoiler, but also understood the argument of the story being compromised due to the surprise being leaked. According to Hawk and Dove writer Barbara Kiesel, the team originally tried to fit in other characters based on what books had recently been canceled. Despite her feelings to the situation, and I'll touch on that here shortly, she did think the first idea she was told sounded good. Monarch would be both Hawk and Dove. This gave a reason to the character change, as Monarch's personality would be unstable for having incorporated both characters. To the creative team behind Armageddon 2001, though, this made less sense, as the combo of the two would make a better balanced individual. No matter the opinion, the decision was made to go with Hawk, and the Hawk and Dove team would not be thrilled. When asked about why they chose Hawk of all characters, Jonathan Peterson, who was an editor at DC, he worked on Armageddon 2001, I believe, The Alien Agenda, and he was going to write Team Titans after the event. He said the following. With Captain Atom, it made sense power-wise, with the atomic powers, and in a weird way, it would echo Watchmen's Dr. Manhattan. Dr. Manhattan was based on Captain Atom since Watchmen started as the charlatan characters anyways. Then he would also do an Anakin Skywalker thing. Hawk was this warlike guy anyway. You could just push him off the deep end, bring him to the dark side, and that would be the tragedy. That Wave Rider's interference would ultimately be the event to cause Hawk's transformation. He was a B-level character we could do something with anyway. This would obviously lead to problems with fans. The story had signs that pointed to Captain Atom. When Wave Rider goes through the timeline and sees different results, two moments particularly stand out. Every timeline shows that Hank Hall fights Monarch, but doesn't actually become Monarch. Thus, a continuity issue is created, as the story itself already ruled him out. The second, and the one that comes up right before issue 2 of Armageddon 2001, is that the Justice League Europe annual hints that Captain Atom is the last one whose future has not been seen. As Wave Rider goes to touch him to see his future, the book ends and says the conclusion will be in Armageddon 2001 number 2. Though possibly the biggest problem came with the death of Dove. Writer Barbara Randall Kiesel wrote something to Dick Giordano in the 80s after he brushed off critique on how women were written in a fan letter page response. that would bear similarities to the trope women in refrigerators, which is something that writer Gail Simone would later make a prominent splash with. In that letter, Barbara would write that female heroes shouldn't lose something, such as their powers, their life, etc., in an effort to push a male counterpart forward in some manner. That's how she approached writing Hawk and Dove. So with Dove being killed to make Hawk change the character, it was counter to what Kiesel originally strove to do with those characters. This would seem to be a character assassination of sorts for the character of Hank Hall, or Hawk. Fans found the character's personality changed for no reason, and was out of character for him. And because of that change, the series of Hawk and Dove had to be cancelled. Writer Carl Kiesel, who was writing Hawk and Dove at the time with his wife Barbara, said this to illustrate the frustration. Hawk and Dove was always a love story. Then one day, Hawk went insane and murdered Dove. Barbara Randall Kiesel let her frustration out many years later in an interview with Sequential Tart. And here is what she said about that. Let's get one thing clear. That wasn't a planned ending of Hawk and Dove. That awful story was an Armageddon 2001 special created after somebody at DC spilled the beans about Captain Adams being Monarch. Then a small number of people worked feverishly to find some other character to sacrifice, and since Hawk and Dove had just been cancelled. If you've ever pitied anyone, pity Jonathan Peterson, the poor person who had to give me the news. I wasn't pleased, and wasn't shy about sharing. If there's anything I hate with a passion, it's characters behaving out of character, especially when it involves a smart woman being stupid for no reason. Hawk and Dove becoming Monarch could have been a clever idea if they both became the character. Their innately opposite natures could explain a schizophrenic villain. As it was a last-minute fix that sucked. The ending closest to what I have in mind was in the Unity story in the Hawk and Dove Annual number 2, but it's all water under the bridge. Because of this change, it fell on the shoulders of Dan Jurgens to fix the art for an almost complete Armageddon 2001 number 2 and update the end. Time was short, and it's clear where elements were fixed to change the character responsible for Monarch. Despite the problems with Armageddon 2001, the series was successful for DC. So much so, they went back to the well with Armageddon The Alien Agenda and Armageddon Inferno afterwards, even if the connection with the latter was flimsy at best. And so, now I'm going to talk a little bit about Armageddon 2001, the actual story. So, the first issue has writer Archie Goodwin, Dan Jurgens as the illustrator, inker Dick Giordano, letterer Albert D. Geisman, I hope I pronounced that right, colorist Anthony Tollin, assistant editor Kelly Puckett, and editor Denny O'Neill. So the first issue, what it does is it sets up Matthew Rider in the year 2030. He informs the reader that in the year 2001, one of the great superheroes of the time went bad and killed all the other heroes. This would be Monarch. Monarch would take over the world, and he would watch from satellites in space that prevented any rebellion that would come up. And he did what he could do to keep everyone in line, including having his own police force. Speaking about past heroes was treasonous, and information about them was wiped from records and swept under the rug for future generations. Matthew Rider, though, has memories of being saved as a child by a hero. He wishes he lived in a world with them. So when time travel becomes an option, he hops at the opportunity under the guise of helping Monarch. Monarch is looking for a way to enter the time stream so he can solve the dilemma of being stopped in case someone goes back to change him from gaining control. His protection of his identity helps that, as nobody knows who he is, but it isn't perfect. Matt convinces him to send him into the time stream, but he has his own plans. Go back to 2001, figure out who Monarch is so he can be stopped. While in the time stream, though, his body changes due to temporal energies. He becomes Wave Rider. And upon going to the year 2001, he learns he can touch someone and see their various futures. With the new power, he knows what he must do. Visit all the heroes and learn who will become Monarch. And this is where all of the annuals for that summer would take place. He would go to all these different heroes. He would touch them and poof, into the future he would go. And since some of these characters, such as Batman and Superman, had different series going out at the time, they had to come up with different futures for that character. So the series, I'm not going to go through the annuals at all. I'm not going to sit here and discuss, you know, what happens in each one, because there are so many. But I will at least tell you which annuals they are that does it. So Superman Annual number 3 from the Volume 2. Batman Annual 15, Justice League America Annual number 5, Action Comics Annual number 3, The Flash Annual number 4, Hawkworld Annual number 2, New Titans Annual number 7, Detective Comics Annual number 4, Adventures of Superman Annual number 3, Legion Annual number 2, Hawk and Dove Annual number 2, and finally, Justice League Europe number 2, which is what leads into Armageddon 2001 number 2. And this was also the script by Denny O'Neill. Dan Jurgens was also the artist. Inker actually added in Art Thibert, Steve Mitchell, along with Dick Giordano. John Costanza was the letterer. Adrian Roy was the colorist, and then, of course, Jonathan Peterson was the editor for this one. So this one takes place right from the end of Justice League Europe Annual number 2, with Wave Rider and Captain Atom stuck in a dead stare. Wave Rider has narrowed down the Monarch possibilities, and Captain Atom seems to be the one. To be sure, he touches him and filters out timelines that don't match up. But he finds one that does, and it begins in 2001 with the murder of his children and grandchildren. After the cops overlooking the scene brush him off rudely, he gets the urge to turn into Captain Atom from his elderly state. But 6 years prior, he swore he wouldn't do that again after anomalies began to manifest, affecting laws of physics due to his time as Captain Atom. Despite this, though, Nathaniel Adams can't keep his powers at bay after finding out that the morgue at the police station would just throw away his children and grandchildren's bodies once they were done. At a dump. They didn't allow them to get buried. They just threw them away in the trash. So he goes full Captain Atom, quickly finds the gang members who did it, and wipe them all out. All the while, his power usage has opened a rift between time streams and realities, and a man who has been lost between them finds his way out. And it happens to pull him to the present day, where all the heroes are watching as Wave Rider checks Captain Atom's history. Monarch has arrived. He knew Matthew Rider was going to try and stop him, so knowing his success in the time stream, he followed along. The heroes try to stop him to no avail. He simply vanishes after a short struggle. His goal is to make sure his history is guaranteed to exist. And to do this, he captures Hawk and Dove. In an attempt to drive Hawk fully mad, he kills Dove right in front of him. Hawk flips out and kills Monarch, all the while revealing that Monarch is Hawk himself. Setting out to put order in the world in a way only he thinks he can, he becomes Monarch at that moment. Meanwhile, the heroes are scouring Metropolis for Monarch, and he arrives as expected, but he also brings a giant bomb along, and it sits atop Star Labs. The heroes jump in to stop him and immediately break his mask, revealing Hank Hall. He uses his energy powers to hurt everyone, but Captain Atom leaps in and starts absorbing the energy. As this will help ruin his plans, Monarch collides with Captain Atom, and their energies cause a rift in time that pull them into it and destroy Star Labs. The heroes rush in to save the people still trapped, and Wave Rider pulls out someone in particular, a little boy by the name of Matthew Rider. The last page shows Captain Atom out in the wild. A destroyed glove indicates Monarch is there somewhere, and as he turns around and we see a Triceratops, we realize he has traveled to the past. I'm not really going to talk too much about the other series that came afterwards. For example, Action Comics number 670 was the aftermath. However, it's not really an aftermath, it's more of a kind of goes parallel to that issue number 2. It's basically the final battle against Monarch, just told from a different perspective. It's not really a huge tie-in. It's mostly just a chunk of it to prepare for the next Superman issue. But this is where they introduce that era of Superman's Atomic Skull character. Armageddon Alien Agenda. I personally did not like that series, but each issue has Captain Atom and Monarch jumping to a different time period. So, like, the end of issue number 2 shows they're back in the prehistoric past. They go into the far future. They go into, like, cowboy era. So each issue is just them kind of hopping throughout time as they kind of fight each other and, you know, whatever. And then Armageddon Inferno. This one I'll talk a little bit more about because this is something I used to... I remember running across these issues in particular while doing my beloved antique shopping. Like, without fail, Armageddon Inferno would be a comic I would find in there. And I never knew how many issues it was, from what I remember. So every time I would find one, I would have to buy it. But I feel like I never got the whole series, so I didn't even finish reading it until many years later. So I kind of have, like, this weird fascination and love with Armageddon Inferno, even though I couldn't tell you anything about what it was about until I researched it. So Armageddon Inferno. In 1992, DC Comics decided to do a sequel to Armageddon 2001 in the 4-issue miniseries Armageddon Inferno. This would revolve around a being named Abraxas, who discovers there are other dimensions outside of his own, thanks to Wave Rider. Wave Rider defends against Abraxas by gathering heroes to fight off his troops at different periods of time, such as World War II, the Legion of Superheroes future, the present era, and also prehistoric times. After a successful miniseries of the Justice Society, they decided to try and bring them back into the main DCU after not being seen since Crisis on Infinite Earths. Armageddon Inferno was about rescuing them from Limbo, where they were fighting the good fight forever. This would eventually lead to the Justice Society of America book by Len Strzelczewski and Mike Paravic. That series would be short-lived, though, as Mike Carlin decided to cancel the book and have them die off in Zero Hour. And if you want more on that, please go check out both our Zero Hour episodes and our interview with Dan Juergens, where he kind of discusses that. And so with that, that's all I have about the main Armageddon 2001 topic. So what I have left here is the random trivia. So, according to Tom Pyre, he believes that Armageddon 2001 exists because of trouble brewing with the Wonder Woman War of the Gods event. It was running into scheduling issues, and to try and reduce the embarrassment to DC for screwing it up, they threw another event out at roughly the same time, Armageddon 2001. And we will kind of get more into that Wonder Woman War of Gods event on our next episode, as we discuss George Perez, something I always screw up. Yeah, that's also something that didn't just lead to Armageddon 2001 and War of the Gods being a mess, but also led to many problems with George Perez in DC. So we'll talk about that on another episode. A JSA story years later would try to turn the story around as well. In it, which is JSA number 14, we discover that Mordru influenced events to fake the events of Armageddon 2001 by manipulating Hawk into thinking Dove was murdered to have him go crazy. But in reality, she hadn't been. The goal was to have Hawk impregnate Dove after Mordru took control of him, so Dove would birth a child that held the power of both Lords of Chaos and Order. Another attempt to kind of change up Armageddon 2001 would be around the time of Infinite Crisis with Battle for Bloodhaven. In it, we see a new monarch, with this one actually being Captain Atom. After a return to this planet, after being shunted into the Wildstorm universe, he was comatose and had breaches in his skin, making him extremely dangerous to be around. After being put into the new Monarch armor, we learn that the events have left him a little mentally unstable. We learn in Countdown number 8 that all of this was devised by Solomon the Monitor as another piece of the puzzle to assimilate the other monitors during the Countdown series. While these two stories are typically remembered as Monarch follow-ups, including Zero Hour, Monarch also made another appearance before the JSA and Battle for Bloodhaven stories. In the mid-90s Extreme Justice series, Monarch returns, and this time he looks like Nathaniel Adam. I tried reading that. I wasn't really fully understanding it, but I didn't actually realize he was in that series. So, I don't know. It was an interesting thing I kind of ran across as I was just reading it just because. One of the rumors as to why DC killed Dove actually has to do with Rob Liefeld. Rob was one of the co-creators of Dove, and supposedly, some of the editorial staff flat out didn't like Rob. And he has made comments about his working relationship with DC Comics at that time, too. In an effort to end the book and make sure Rob didn't earn any more royalties, Dove would be the one killed. I also asked Juergens if he ever learned who spilled the beans about Monarch being Captain Adam. I wasn't going to have him just like flat out drop a name if he knew who it was. He said that nobody ever came forward as to being the person to do so, but there were definitely some people that they suspected. However, they never had anything concrete to know for sure. So I don't know if anyone ever has admitted to it behind the scenes. I don't know if anyone will, but I know I kind of have some suspicions myself based on kind of the research. But again, that's all it would be suspicions. I wouldn't have anything known for sure. And it seems like nobody really knows for sure other than the person that did it and probably the person who received that intel. But that's it. That's all I have for Armageddon 2001. So let's get to the other side here and end this episode. So normally at this time, I would tell you to rate and review, all that kind of stuff. Follow us on Twitter X now. And I'm not going to do that here. If you listen to my last episode, The Wave Riding Into the Sunset, Hyper Time is coming to a close. Research and stuff and just life in general has made it incredibly difficult to do these, which is also why I haven't been able to record with Alan. Just another wrench constantly thrown in the works, finding time to record. I'm actually doing this on a Tuesday morning. My kids went back to school today. They have a half day, so I have to do the night shift. So I'm trying to pound this episode out in the morning before I have to go pick them up later here in a few hours. So again, just happened to have the time on me and was like, gotta do it. Gotta do it now. Let's do it. Let's just get it out of the way. Hyper Time is going to be coming to a close. The next episode on George Perez is going to be the final episode. I might do one more after that, just kind of detailing like what the plan is for myself. I don't plan on stopping doing podcasts. I just want to focus more on something I fully love as opposed to this, which is like, I love talking about comics. I hate the research. I hate researching it and wasting time if I can't find anything. So, yeah. Sadly, second to last episode. Next one should also be good. It was one I had started putting together before. Actually, it was right after George had his diagnosis that he only had like a year to live or whatever. So that one, I can't think of a better way to end the series than on one of the most influential creators in comics of all time. That one I think will be good. While Hyper Time is coming to a close, VGU.TV, the other stuff that I do there, which typically focuses on video games and stuff, you can still find us there. VGU.TV, we have a YouTube for VGU TV as well. Please check us out there. We have other podcasts such as Players Club. What I plan to do in the future will be there. I kind of do these, kind of like my Wave Riding series I've been doing for Hyper Time. I had started doing stuff over there as well. So we got stuff coming out. So please check that out. Rate and review us over there. Pass us around to let everyone know about us. And Yeah, just trying to make it through. I hope you all are doing the same as well. So with that, I will bid you all adieu. I hope you all take care, and I will see you on the next episode. Bye!
This has been a VGU.TV production. For all of the hottest hot takes and other opinions on video games, music, and a lot more, tune in to VGU.TV.